The following audio log represents a science experiment conducted in Denmark on the 2nd of December 2017 at precisely 15:07 p.m. Two British gentlemen ingested a large amount of Thai Red Bull and then decided it would be a good idea to record a podcast. This is that story. It's called
Tom Matt Attack. Tom Matt Attack!
Oh, God, I'm
just
sorry.
Just half a small bottle of Thai Red Bull each.
And we are both alive. There is illuminated.
I definitely feel an effect of this. Now, this isn't like regular Red Bull at all, is it? This is something you introduced to me. The original Red Bull, is this correct?
I believe so. Right, so the story is, we had been in an Asian food shop here in Denmark because we cook a lot of Japanese things. I'm sure I've talked about this in the podcast since coming back from Japan.
Well, you do.
I've been infatuated with Japanese cooking, as is my fiancé. So
you're talking about your and Master's trips to Asian food stores.
Yes. Okay. So we've been going into these places and buying like Japanese curry blocks and all of these other things. Yes, we have. You have eaten one of those Japanese curries. And upon doing that, we saw that they had Thai Red Bull. Now, one of my fiancé's cousins collects Red Bull, much like everyone else collects something. His thing is Red Bull for some reason. He started noticing the same way I did with Fanta, that every country tends to have a slightly different packaging variant of Red Bull, and he started buying them for a bit of a laugh. And then it became a thing because he started doing couch surfing, so people now bring him different Red Bulls from all over the world. But for some reason, he didn't have a Thai one in this weird medicine-shaped bottle thing that we found in this Asian store.
It's a brown bottle.
Yeah. And so before the podcast, I believe it was like 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, me and you were watching a video of someone drinking this Thai Red Bull.
Two American kids.
Yeah.
Who was treating it like it was a very rare thing.
Yes. Well, I've seen it in like several Asian shops since then, so I don't know how true the rarity of Thai Red Bull is. I mean, Thailand is a massive country with a massive population, so probably not that rare.
If you go into any Asian food store, you probably find a Thai Red Bull.
Probably, yeah. So we got it for him, and it's been sat here, and you were like, oh, wow, I wonder what that tastes like. So today we were in an Asian store in a smaller town while we were doing some retro game shopping, and I took the plunge. I bought two bottles of the stuff. We were going to have a bottle each, and it seems that drinking half a bottle between us was probably the better option, because my head's a little bit boof, 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 boof at the moment.
I definitely feel something switched on up there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Something's going on. I don't quite tell what's going on, but something's going on up there.
Yeah.
My head.
I don't know if you have wings. I can't tell under the hoodie you're wearing.
I feel like there's a party in my brain.
Yeah. Okay, interesting.
I know what's interesting about it is the consistency. I thought the first thing as consuming this, I'd forgotten that Red Bull was actually fizzy.
Yes.
Normally this isn't, this is like flat Red Bull, but it's got a certain thickness to it. It not so unlike medicine, and you know, with the bottle it's in as well, it just have that overall feel that you're taking some sort of medicine.
It's got a bit of a cough syrup vibe to it,
it's
like
not
a Calpol.
Incredibly thick.
Yeah, it's not Calpol levels.
No. But it's thicker than standard Red Bull. It's like standard Red Bull's like watered down fizzy version of this.
Yeah, I would imagine I imagine like this is the equivalent of like the syrup you get in the dispensers at like cinemas. You know what I mean? Like
perhaps,
sometimes when you get thicker versions of like a Coke there and they haven't put in enough fizz.
Yeah.
It gets that kind of like viscous feeling to it.
But it doesn't taste so dissimilar, really.
No, it doesn't. It's very, very similar in taste. It's just
And smells the same, too. Yeah.
The British version, or I guess the European version, I don't know if the American version is any different, tastes very much like an atypical fizzy energy drink. It defined a genre of those things.
Yeah. As with any energy drink, though, if you're not used to drinking these sort of things, they can make you rather hyper.
I mean, I tend to ingest a lot of caffeine anyway.
I don't. I don't, you see. I've not even had a cup of tea today. And no. That was the first caffeine I had all day. But now we're having a cup of tea as well. That's why
exactly.
We decided just to go for half each.
Yeah, well, I could have gone with the full one, but I haven't drunk an energy drink in about 2 years, I think.
What's nice is it comes in a small... it's a small portion, isn't it?
I think that's all you need, though.
Yeah, you see these cans that are so big. Not usually Red Bull. Red Bull's usually in smaller cans.
It's usually Monster is the bigger one.
That scares me.
Rockstar.
That scares me. I had one of them once... when we were in Copenhagen, I think you probably would have been there.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you remember when I drank an energy in Copenhagen?
No, I don't.
Okay. I regretted it, instantly regretted it afterwards, because I was not ready for it.
When I used to go skating, I used to drink Relentless, which is the British energy drink brand. It's just huge cans. Like, we're usually with fruit juice as well, so you don't really notice all of the stuff you're getting, and then you're getting all of the sugar from the fruit on top of it. And so it just hits you like a brick wall. But then it got to the point where I would drink one of those and I wouldn't really feel it, so I'd drink two. And then
that's what it can be like when you're drinking alcohol.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Dangerous, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But that's why I tended to stop drinking them, just because they're so full of sugar and so full of like weird chemical crap that it's probably not good for you. So I was like, I'll give those a
miss. We had to try this, so...
We did.
If you're interested in trying it yourself, just head down to your local Asian food store. You might find Thai Red Bull in the fridge over there.
You may.
Yeah.
And it won't be that bad. But how are you besides that, anyway? Besides our adventures, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm great, thank you. I think the most recent current thing to talk about is, in fact, the fact that we went to Horsens.
We did, yeah. We went to a small little town nearby.
We've mentioned this before on several podcasts. So I bet you're itching to know what video game bargains we found there.
Exactly. Not many.
Not many. There is some good deals on in Denmark at the moment. Matt wasn't interested, but you can get Dark Souls 3 for 100 kroner on Xbox One. You can also get
Rainbow Six Siege.
Rainbow Six Siege for 50 kroner, to tell you a little bit about how that works out. Just a little bit more than £10 for Dark Souls, and a bit more than £5. It's hard to say nowadays, because I'm not sure it's actually... We used to convert it straight for, didn't we? Like £5 and 50 kroner, but now I think it's a little different at the moment.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more. It's like £6 or, 100 kroners is like £12.
Yeah,
you know, something like that.
Yeah.
But still, great prices. I picked up, not on this trip, but from another Danish store, Bilka, actually where those deals were on, online, Uncharted 4 for 99 kroner.
Yeah, I almost purchased Horizon Zero Dawn last week for 160. I did get one thing. I was actually kind of off the back of Black Friday. And I bought E.T. for Lego Dimensions.
Now, this was from GameStop Horsens, wasn't it?
It was a whopping 35 kroner, which is, about £4. And I was like, cool, I'll have that.
As you are a fan of E.T.
I am. Small disclaimer, may or may not have designed that figure. So it was one of the few I was missing. So I was just like,
And when you put that freaky E.T. torso on anything, it does make it even more freaky.
Man, he's beautiful. Bless him. Yeah. That's how E.T. looks.
Yeah, it's a great figure. Well done.
Thank you very much. So I was actually looking for the Gremlins as
I have,
well.
I think I have this, Matt. I think I picked up E.T. I've been mad not to have. Do I?
I don't know. Maybe you should check, see if they have it in our GameStop here near the Tom and Matt shack. Who knows? So I didn't really partake in any of the Black Friday deals either. Yeah, of course, I'm going to put them on display with the rest of them.
Rest of your ETs? Or?
No, the rest of... Well, I do have an ET up the top that he will join, I think.
Do you know there's a guy at work who collects ETs?
No, I didn't.
On his desk.
Really?
If you go over... Is it his name Tommy?
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
In Project House.
Yeah, Lego. Interesting. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. No, that's cool.
Yeah.
I was going to get a few things in Black Friday and I ended up not doing it. Just because I'm trying to stick to my guns with this whole I'm not
well,
really going to play video games
next year.
Well,
I your dedication to that.
Yeah.
that cause. What else did you buy today? Did you buy any more games?
I did, yeah. I picked some stuff up in a secondhand store that we tend to go to. They don't seem to have really got many things in since we last went there, and that was about 6 months ago.
It was a bit dry, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think... Perhaps the days of that secondhand store having lots of...
What would you say was the best thing you ever found there? Is there anything that stands out particularly? Or?
God, I got loads of good stuff from that store over the years.
We've both now... I don't want to spoil your surprise.
I bought The Note, which is quite a rare Sunsoft survival horror game for the PlayStation. I got like Metal Slug Advance from there. I got a few other like Game Boy Color games that are quite obscure from there over time. Like, there's been a few things I've got from that store
you
over the years.
Consider us regulars, can you? They definitely know us there now, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I used to go there pretty much every other month because there was always flea markets on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, the store was also open on a Sunday, and sometimes they had flea markets on a Saturday, which would be even better because then I could go to a lot more places as well. But yeah, like over the years, like he even said to me a couple of months back, he goes, I think that's pretty much it. He said, like, you know, like this is, we don't get much stuff in now.
People don't trade in PS2
games. People don't trade in PS2 games. People don't even trade in, like, I think maybe just PS4 seeing now. But
how does that happen? No, people just stop trading in
I think
games.
People just get to the point where, you know, there's people like us who don't sell the stuff back, and then the people who've cleared out the garages have already done that.
Yeah,
so
they did have some Xbox One games, didn't they? I guess PS4, you say, as well.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I picked up some stuff.
Want to pick up the cheap stuff, which is usually PS2.
Yes.
You know, that's...
No, but I mean, like, I don't mind buying other stuff. Like, they had Way of the Samurai 3 there.
On PS3?
On PS3.
Yeah.
But I know that GameStop currently has a 3-for-2 on their PS3 stuff. And so I'm like, well, I know that both our store and the one nearby in Colling have Way of the Samurai 3 and 4 pre-owned, so I can just get those and then it'll work out cheaper and I get another game. But the game I did get, Tom Parry, that obviously you're eyeing up with sheer envy, is Adora the Explorer Super Spies for the Game Boy Advance.
Beat me to it.
Yeah.
Actually, I noticed that, and then...
You did, I was all over it. So my... Like, it doesn't look too bad.
That's an American copy of it.
It is an American copy, and it is a genuine copy. I did open it and inspect it and do all this other stuff, but it's all good. It is a genuine American copy.
Under your magnifying glass. Don't want to be caught out by that again.
No.
You know, you can get Double Dragon Advance for £5 on eBay.
Really? Pre-owned? Yeah, I'm sure you can.
Copies of it.
Yeah, I'm sure you could buy it even cheaper on Alibaba. You'd probably get it for about £1.
Yeah, you can choose what colour cartridge you want as well.
Oh, that'd be beautiful.
Transparent red.
Yeah.
Whatever.
What, so you can make it clear it's a fake, you mean? Anyway, so I bought this because it looked okay when I flicked over the back. I was like, oh, it can't be that horrible.
May I touch it?
You may touch it, Tom. You may stroke it. But the thing is, I thought, well, in the future, maybe if I ever want to cover Game Boy Advance games, my nephew once watched
it. It looks like a platform adventure game.
It is a platform adventure
developed
game.
Developed by Gotham Games.
It seems that way. I have no idea who that is.
But... Group.
Yeah.
Senior Tucan.
Yes, all of them have Spanish names because Dora speaks Spanish.
Special mission for Super Spy Dora and Super Spy Boots. Who's Boots?
Boots is the...
Oh, the monkey.
Yes.
Hmm.
I couldn't remember because Diego also has a sidekick and I couldn't remember which one is which. But see, the bad guy in Dora is called Swiper and you had to yell at the television screen to help Dora out before he stole things to say Swiper, no swiping. And I thought that was... quite fun.
Interactive television.
Exactly.
At its finest. So
exactly.
You've got practically here, I'd say, mint copy of Dora the Explorer Super Spies for the Game Boy Advance.
Yes,
well
I
done,
assume
Matthew.
An American exclusive.
For 49 kroner.
Yes, a whopping £5 for a boxed Game Boy Advance game core. But I mean, in all fairness, I don't really see that much boxed Game Boy Advance stuff these days. So anything I don't have, I tend to go, oh, I'll take that.
I'll have that for a dollar.
I will. What I did get, though, was they have a deal always on their PS2 stuff, and that is 3-for-2. So
yeah.
I looked at those things, and I looked at what they had, and I was like, oh, great, they got a copy of Mad Maestro. This is a game I've wanted for a while, as well as Mr. Mosquito, and I don't
Yeah, I've got Mad Maestro. The one to get, I think, Mr. Mosquito, though.
Yeah.
I think that's the more interesting
well,
concept.
Well, see, this is the thing, right? Mr. Mosquito was absolutely bloody everywhere
at one point.
And I didn't buy it.
Neither did I.
And now it's quite an expensive game, and I'm kicking myself because it was a budget
title. I think
title.
The concept is rather humorous.
Yes, it is. Yes. So I got Mad Maestro.
Mad Maestro.
But I also picked up on your recommendation, a copy of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yes.
You've talked about it on the podcast before. You said it's very unique fighting style to it. And I was like, well,
it is
okay.
A pseudo successor to the Bushido Blade.
Yes. And it was...
And the same studio developed it.
It was a whopping, like, £3.
It's a very unique action fighting game based on a rather unique, enjoyable Asian martial arts...
Fighting game series. Film. Yeah. And on a film. Yeah. So I also picked up, finally, Mobile Light Force 2, which has the worst cover in the world.
Oh my god, it looks like Super Spies.
Yes, it does. It's got a Charlie's Angels vibe to it for some reason.
But you switched to the back and it's like a totally different game.
Yeah, but it's a top-down shooter, and I've actually heard that it's not a bad top-down shooter.
May I look at that?
Yes, you may.
Every character has a special attack. Wow, okay. Well, that's a great first thing. All-out aerial assault. Each level has a tougher enemy foe.
Yeah.
Well, that's what you'd hope. High score defeats the enemy.
Yep.
Take survival into your control. Right, okay. Yeah, it looks like a top-down shooter. And are you a flying human being then?
No, I believe you're a spaceship.
But then why are these girls running on the front?
Because... it looks cool, and I guess they are piloting the
spaceships.
They
just want to sell this to girls?
Well, no, I assume they wanted to sell it to someone...
Was it sexy?
I assume so. I mean, it doesn't look that way.
Maybe the original cover had three anime-style girls on there.
No, it didn't. I'm literally looking it up as we speak.
Oh, wow. Because that's what I would have expected.
Two anime girls and a guy. It has got two anime girls.
Okay, right. And they thought, well, anime doesn't sell in the... ridiculous thinking. Let's westernize this cover somewhat.
Yes.
That's exactly what's happened here. And it looks like a Mattel product or a Barbie thing.
It does, yeah.
You know, it does not look like a top-down shooter.
And it looks like a pretty accomplished top-down shooter from what I've heard. So I will...
Is it desirable game? Is it a valuable game?
I don't think it's a very valuable game, but I think... You know, for most of these games, there is a certain degree of, oh, I want that.
And it's Mobile Light Force 2, not 1.
It is Mobile Light Force 2, Tom, because the first Mobile Light Force game is a title you would actually know, called Gunbird.
I know Gunbird, yeah.
You do. This is Gunbird 2, essentially.
So you are a person on a broomstick.
No, you're not. It's not that chibi or anything in the actual thing, but I think you maybe are a person. You were, yeah.
Well, one of the characters, at least.
Yeah, but this is a game with a pedigree. Actually, it does look like you are a person. So, yeah, you probably are a person on a broomstick.
There you go. I thought it was very weird. You don't put a spaceship on the front if you're going to be flying a spaceship.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Okay, cool. That's some stellar pickups there, Matthew.
Yeah, and all for about £6. So, it's all right.
Well done.
Yeah. Rah, what did you buy?
Let me look in my bag of tricks. Ooh. You wouldn't know everything, they're just the games.
Just the games. There's no need
there's
for
only one game.
Oh, I know what game it is. You don't even have to get it out of the bag.
Biker Mice from Mars for the PS2. I can't remember the cover looking like this.
I remember the cover looking like this.
I feel like you actually had the Biker Mice on the cover, I remember. This is just the logo.
This is probably a European version of the cover. Is the back in Danish?
No. It's British. This is okay. A British version. What got me curious about this was Crete Studios, right?
Yeah.
I swear I've played something by them recently. Not sure exactly what they've developed. Criterion, as well, as mentioned on the back.
Yes.
I'm wondering if this is the same Criterion who did... That's a different cover.
It is a different cover. Is it a different game, though?
Oh, yeah. That says 2006.
Yes.
This says 2006.
Oh, that's the... Yeah, well, apparently that's also a European cover. Who knows?
Why is this cover different from that cover?
I don't know.
Rare variant.
Oh!
Anyway, Criterion, I think, seem to have had the hand in this, and I'm guessing it's with the driving sections on the bikes.
One would assume.
Because they made that game... Speed Kings?
Yes.
Or something?
They did.
Which is a motorcycling game I've talked about on the podcast before. So I imagine they took that and put a Biker Mice from Mars skin on it, and it's also got some fighting sections, which are probably developed by Crete Studios. 15 different levels, 3 playable characters, 2 exciting game modes. There you go, so it's like 2 games in one.
Yeah.
And more than 35 possible upgrades. So there you go. I'm actually looking into getting the Super Nintendo Biker Mice from Mars game that's made by Konami, which is a top-down racing game.
Yes.
But I saw this and thought, well, I'll give this a go.
I'm actually looking at a screen grab of that, and there's a nice Snickers-sponsored arena.
Wow. Is that the Super Nintendo game? Super Nintendo really good. Game. I don't know if this is going to be good or really bad, but looking at the pedigree, I've definitely played games by these two studios before. That looks like a mobile phone game.
It does. It probably is.
I think that is.
Yeah. Who knows?
There you go. 39 kroner. That's reasonably cheap.
Can't fault it.
I will give it a go at that price. Bought some records, bought a couple of DVDs too.
Yes. Did you buy anything else this week? You've been playing?
Bought some Pokemon cards.
Yeah, other than those Pokemon cards. I mean, video games.
Yeah, so I mentioned Uncharted. Also picked up Cars 3, Driven to Win. Okay. Game I've been long curious about. As soon as it was announced, I was actually planning getting it on the Wii U because it was like practically one of the last or the last Wii U game I can think that got released.
Yeah.
But then I read that the Wii U version only has two player, as does I think the Switch version.
Yeah.
Whereas the Xbox One and PS4 versions have four player.
Okay.
And definitely have a lot nicer lighting and graphics and everything.
Of course, that's what they're saying, right?
I thought, well, I don't plan on getting any other sort of kart races for the Xbox. I'll get this one on the Xbox, I thought. Mm-hmm. So that'll be my go-to kind of fun kart-style racer. Because I've got a few already on PS4, so it's on Xbox. Hasn't arrived yet, but it's made by Avalanche, you know, a studio which has proven track record. So I will look forward to playing that. I've heard some good things about it. Also, Cars 2 was very good as well. If I don't know if you ever got to play that.
I think I played it with you. I think it was all right.
It's a good karting-style racer.
Yes, enjoy
weapons
a good time.
And such, yeah. And this is great because this is exactly what it's a racing game. It's not like a big story game like the original Cars game was on PS2.
I mean,
and
I guess
GameCube
it's probably
Xbox.
The only like tarted like arcadey style
that's
racer
Mario
you can
Kart.
Get right now. That's not Mario Kart because everything else like Project Cars and
there's a few that I've downloaded on the PS4.
Yeah,
like Obliteracers. Mm-hmm. To a lesser extent,
Coffin Dodgers.
Coffin Dodgers isn't a big AAA title.
No, it isn't.
But it entertained me enough to play through the entire game.
Yeah, I played through the entire game as well. So
we all played Coffin Dodgers. I also persuaded
like
our friend
10,
Gareth to buy it as well.
It was like 10 kroner or something though, right? Ooh. It was like a quid. Ooh. I mean, you know, I'll give anything a go for a quid.
And it's always on sale, so
yeah. True that.
There's been a few things. I also got that, I bought a few things on sale recently, but the definitive edition of Ori and the Blind Forest.
Yeah.
Downloaded that, only to find I think I had the regular edition already somehow.
Yeah.
Maybe that was a Games of Gold thing at some
Maybe.
Point. So I was like, oh well. And the forest one, there's one that looks like Ori in the Blind Forest, but it's got like a fox in it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen this thing?
Yes.
Yes. I can't remember what it's called, though.
Me neither.
Oh, I feel terrible. Sorry. Can't remember what that one's called. Did I buy anything else in the sales? Nothing that springs to mind. Actually, yeah. I probably did. But you know what it's like when you see a cheap game in the digital store. It's like, oh, just get that.
Yeah.
Just pick it up. And then maybe sometimes you forget you bought.
Exactly.
Terrible, really.
Yeah.
But I only tend to buy stuff if it's like a five or a less.
Yeah.
That seems to be where I go and say, oh, well, that's probably worth a go at that.
Mm-hmm.
If it's that price.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I picked up a few things this week. I got some Wii U games off a colleague who was selling his Wii U stuff, so I filled some holes in my Nintendo exclusives. I got Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, finally. I got Hyrule Warriors.
And I think you got a good deal.
Yeah, I did.
I paid about 20 quid for Hyrule Warriors secondhand.
Yeah.
I bought Mario 3D World.
Yeah, when it came out.
When it came out. And Donkey Kong, I bought that when it came out.
Yeah. And I also got Super Mario 3D World. I paid 500 kroner for the three of them just because they were in really nice condition.
Well, 3D World's great. Did you complete it?
I did not, no. And that's the thing.
You're going to love that game. Now you've played the other one.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I can't play Odyssey through with Marta. So this would be a nice couch co-op game. We were enjoying playing this multiplayer when we still lived together back in the Tomahawk Shack.
Great game.
So we shall get on it, and hopefully, I think we also played it on my Wii U, so I'm hoping our save will still be on there, and we can just pick up where we left off. But we shall see. And on top of that, I also bought Pyre, a game that I've often talked about on this podcast. Just
Did it
because
make you perspire?
Perspire. No, it didn't.
Is it an intense game?
No, the thing was, I was in Bilka. Like I said, they had Horizon Zero Dawn for 169 kroner. And
Regular edition.
Yeah, regular edition. I was looking at it. I was like, well, I could get this. And then I went on How Long to Beat, as I usually do. So it was 22 hours long. Thought, well, actually,
For someone who doesn't want to spend time playing games.
For someone who doesn't really want to spend time playing games and doesn't really have a lot of time to spend playing games.
You're a busy man.
I am at the moment. And 22 hours is a big commitment before the end of the year. I also wanted to beat Night in the Woods. I also wanted eventually to get Pyre. And
so here's a spoiler. Horizon Zero Dawn is not going to be your game of the year.
No, I don't think so.
Neither of us has played it.
No, but I'll perhaps dabble with it. A colleague in work offered to lend me his copy just so I can have a go.
Mm.
But I don't know. Like, I didn't see me wanting to commit to that. Same way I don't want to commit to Assassin's Creed because it's God knows how many hours long.
Yeah, similar.
If I'm going to play something long, I think it'll be Xenoblade because I've heard nothing but good things about that game.
And that might play on your Switch. You can play it while traveling.
But it's also like I'll be home here for Christmas and there's not really a lot going on and my fiance will be working, so maybe I'll just get into that over Christmas, as I usually do, just sink into a game for the holidays.
Hmm.
So I was
that your Christmas gift to yourself?
Maybe. So yeah, I thought about it and said, you know what, actually, I really like Supergiant Games. Bastion, I have long talked about in this podcast. Yeah. It's one of my favourite games. Transistor's a game with a lot of depth and a lot of brilliance to it. I will just buy Pyre. So I did. I came home literally straight from the supermarket and I picked up Pyre instead. About halfway through it, and I've got to be honest, I'm not sure it's really a game for me, which is a bit of a shame. On one hand, I absolutely love the characters in the game. I really like the world they've built and it looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a 3-on-3 sports game. And from what I've seen so far, unless I've just scratched the surface of it or I'm playing it wrong, I don't know, there doesn't seem to be the usual amount of depth that I would expect from a Supergiant game in this sports game. Like, I played a team yesterday who were like undead people, and the AI coordinated in very spectacular ways, and I was like, oh wow, I can do that. And then I tried to do something similar with my team with a different setup, and I couldn't quite figure out how they'd done it. So I don't know if I'm not speccing in the correct way, or there's a way I should be gaining experience outside of the main story to level up and customize my characters. Mm. But it all seems a bit flat from that regard. The trappings of the game are essentially you are a guy who gets outcast from society, and they realize that you can read, which is like an offense in this world, and they ask you to read this book. And the book,
a really great benefit.
The book kind of speaks to you, and you start taking part in this game that's called The Rite. And it's essentially, it's trying to get yourself unbanished by doing it and go back into society by completing in this tournament.
A trial, yeah.
And so as the reader, you can see the stars and the stars tell you where to go. So it's this fun little mini game of you looking around a map and clicking on something and seeing an icon. And you travel around in a wagon and you have multiple choice things. And the overworld is very much a text adventure where you're talking to these characters, reading a lot of script, and you can make choices that affect the story and
affect what
route you take.
One of them.
Which is very nice. However, it's very thin. It's not to the level of something like a Danganronpa, or even when I was playing Akiba's Trip, it's not got that level of story to it. It's more palatable for someone like you who doesn't really like visual novels, but it's
really
still very interesting. You know, you have little cutscenes in between, but no more than you would in like a regular RPG or anything. There's not a lot going on there, and they tell you story. The writing in it is incredible. They tell you the story in a very concise way, and there's a lot of mystery to it, and you're like, okay, cool. But the character design is super interesting. One of the characters is a girl, and essentially what happens when you are outcast in this wasteland, you start to metamorphosize, and so she's got huge horns, and so she's grown in size. She's almost becoming demon-like because of it. There's a guy who looks like your stereotypical, like, handsome man. And then you have a dog with a mustache, because there's dog people in this world who walk and talk like humans, but he's got a nice curly mustache on top of his regular, like, shaggy dog mouth, which is interesting. And yeah, as you're going along, you're meeting different characters and stuff. I don't want to say too much about the story, because I genuinely do believe the story is the most interesting part about the game.
Okay.
So you follow the stars, you go around, you choose your own path, and you interact with these characters, and then you do these things called the Rite. And the story is essentially that they get warped into this world, your team, and you get to pick who you want to play. And then as the reader, you are the person that directs them, i.e. you're the person controlling their actions. Okay. It's very simple. There's an orb but drops effective. In the middle of the field. Then there are two goals either side. You need to literally pick up the orb and dunk it in the goal, the other side.
Okay.
Do this in a variety of ways. You can either run directly into it, you can jump into it, or you can throw the ball in. Throwing the ball in is a lot trickier, but it does have the benefit that if you run the ball into the pyre, one of your characters will not be there for the next round, so it'll only be two of you defending your goal and attacking. So there's like a risk-reward thing of it. But if you throw it in, which I said is a lot trickier, you can keep all three players on the pitch. Each player also has... When you have the orb, you are just the player running. You run with L2, you pass with X, and you can jump with square. The controls are super simple. Much like Bastion's, where it was pretty much the same. Jump with X, slash, and then you could dodge roll with the right bumper. Everyone who doesn't have the orb has a thing called an aura around them, and it's essentially a circle that's marked clearly on the ground, and anyone who walks into that aura immediately gets banished for a set amount of time, like 10 seconds. So you can really use bigger characters with bigger auras as defensive players to like charge out and maybe take out two players. And some of them are super quick, like the dog can run faster than the humans can.
Okay.
And I got an imp character who can essentially fly, so the only way to kill him is to jump up in the air to defend. And so it looks like there might be some depth there. But just not on the crazy levels that Transistor had.
There's depth to it.
Transistor, though, had like your sword had three stackable layers of chips. And depending on what chips you put in, they all affected the other chips. So, for example, there was one combination where if I slashed a sword, I would go invisible, but the invisibility would also trigger my multiplier, so four of me would go invisible and slash at the same time, and then that would make 16 of me, and it would keep on multiplying because of the chipset I had in place. And all of the, I think, the 20 chips in that game, you could stack them in three slots. And every combination, like depending on which one you put the three chips in, would affect what it did. Like there were so many choices of your character. There was countless possibilities for what you could do, and you could pretty much fight in any way you wanted. I'm not seeing that here. Progression seems to be based around the idea of you leveling up your characters, which you can only do in rites. And the rites are the main part of the story. So there's not a chance to like have random battles in the world where you gain XP or go to a camp where you can gain XP. You just gain what you do in the world. So that means, for me at least, I've used the first three characters I've got and not really experimented too much with the others because I've not got XP for them. And it seems to put me at a disadvantage if I was to pull those other characters in. Maybe I've missed something, but the game hasn't at least explained how I would get more XP for these other characters. There is some like passive stuff, like in Final Fantasy games, that some other characters get XP for being in your party while the game has gone on, but not enough to level them, it seems. From the I've done five of the rites now, and I think there's nine.
Okay.
So it's just like, okay, it's a short game, the story's really nice, but the gameplay itself kind of lets down the story, which seems to be a running theme for me this year playing video games. It's the same way I felt about Wolfenstein and, for a certain extent, about Nier Automata. So,
great stories, not great gameplay.
Great stories, not great gameplays. But I hope that they take this world somewhere, because it seems like a world they've created with a lot of depth. I can honestly see...
Like it could have been quite a simple game, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
And like an arcade-style game, but what they've done is that is extra layer of story on top of it, which actually slightly undermines the simple game they've developed.
Yes.
Perhaps, because it is... You expect more of a game when you have this rich of a story.
Yes, exactly. But it does give that experience purpose more so than it would if it was just an arcade game. If it was just an arcade game, I don't think I would have bought it.
Yeah.
But... I was literally, I was in a mood for a visual novel as well. And I was just like, I'm going to go on Reddit. I'm going to check, like, is there a thread of, like, interesting visual novels that have been released? Because they did release the third Danganronpa game and the spin-off, which is called, like, Ultimate Ghoul Despair or something like that. And I was like, oh, should I play one of the new Danganronpas? But everyone in the chat was like, Pyre. Pyre has such a good story and such good characters. Play Pyre. It might not seem like a visual novel, but it's great.
Is it an affordable game? Or
it's 15 quid.
Okay.
But honestly, I do not think you will be put off by the amount of text. Yeah. I know you're not someone who likes that, and I do genuinely think you, as someone who appreciates sports games, will like the sports game.
Okay. Is it something you play multiplayer?
I'm not too sure. That'd I haven't be nice, explored that. If you it? Can, that would add another dynamic layer, to the game. So I'll check. We'll have a look afterwards.
Interested to see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been playing Sonic Forces quite a lot.
Right, okay. So carrying on this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it last week, but I've actually since then had a chance to play a lot more of the game.
By a lot more, you mean you've played an hour?
We were discussing the length of the game. I would say this game is longer than...
3.5 hours.
Yeah, it's longer than Sonic Mania, and you're saying Sonic Mania was...
Sonic Mania is like 5 or 6.
No, it is longer than... It's as long, or if not longer, than Sonic Mania. I think, at least. It's about 30 stages. Some of these are very short. Some of them are a little longer. The later ones, what they do with these sort of ramp up the difficulty a little bit, but not in the fairest way.
No.
You know, you feel like maybe the level design is not as good near the end, and you will find yourself accidentally dying quite a lot.
Yeah.
So rather than being more of a challenge, it's a little bit more of a frustration. Because I'm trying to play the game as I have the rest of the game, you know, pretty relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a game that really demands a lot from the player.
Yeah.
But you can't play it like that when you get to the end, because you're going to fall off and you're going to have to retry areas. And all those S rankings I was getting go down considerably in the last few stages.
Okay.
Not necessarily because it's a new difficulty and a fair or tougher difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
It just suddenly gets a little bit more ruthless.
Yeah.
In your accuracy of platforming and such. And yeah. It's still not an immensely challenging game up to the point where I am, though. I wouldn't say it's terribly difficult.
Yeah.
It just becomes a little bit more uninspired.
Okay.
The further along you get into it. Like, it's sort of dragged out a little bit. They've got these fantastic levels and set pieces, but then some of the levels just don't live up to the quality of other ones.
Okay.
Especially the last few. I mentioned this to you earlier as well. There's one cutscene which feels like it's very compressed. The video quality of this particular cutscene is really bad, and it really does stand out in a game which has a consistently good quality of cutscenes which look pretty much like the in-game graphics. And you get this one, and it's like, what's going on there? You'll know it if you see it later on in the game. It's near within the last 5 or so levels you get this cutscene.
Yeah.
The story, you know, is not much to write home about. But what is nice is you start off as the rookie, and in the end, you get referred to as Buddy.
Yeah.
So, you know, you become a part of the team. And I really do like this new OC aspect.
Yeah.
It's original character you could design and you can play through the levels with. And there's a lot of customization in terms of the character's weapon as well. There's quite a lot of different variations on the weapon that you can give to the character, which enable you to do different things like whip or flamethrower or different abilities. Like, for example, the one the player I play as is a wolf character, and each species also has a different ability.
Yeah.
So rings just gravitate towards me as a wolf character.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what the other characters do, but it does give you some incentive to replay the game as a different kind of character.
Yeah.
In order to get a little bit of a different experience. Core gameplay is very enjoyable, but what certainly became apparent to me later on especially is this game isn't of a consistent level of quality unlike Sonic Mania. Sonic Mania is a consistently good package.
Yes.
It's that old school Sonic flavour, but with quite a lot of new ideas as well. And what Sonic Forces lacks is new ideas.
Yeah.
It does reuse a boss battle a couple of times with two different boss characters, which is a bit of a shame and just shows sort of like a lack of effort in my eyes.
Yeah.
I have been a little bit disappointed later on in the game by it.
Okay.
So I went from being really enthusiastic about it to kind of like, well, I'm kind of done with this now. Is it near the end? Oh, it is.
Yeah.
you know. But I'll still go back and play those other stages that I really liked. Mm-hmm. There's a throwback stage to Chemical Plant, similar to the one of Sonic Generations, which is actually one of the best classic Sonic stages in there, because there's a handful of stages based around the classic Sonic gameplay, completely 2D, and you're using the smaller, cuter Sonic. And that Chemical Plant one is really good. I'd just say overall it's a game of inconsistencies.
That's
a
shame.
But there is a lot to appreciate. So I wouldn't say it's a bad game. It's just, it's a shame it isn't consistently good throughout.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what I'd say about Sonic Forces.
That's a shame. I will play it. If you borrow it to me, I will give
it a
go.
I say I must be on the last stage. I must be on stage 30 now or 29 or something that. So final confrontation with Eggman, I would imagine. Or Infinite.
Yeah.
Infinite being the new villain of this game.
Okay.
Have I played anything else? I played a bit of Sonic Mania, actually.
Yeah.
Because I was determined to finish that, but I've not quite got there yet. I haven't been playing it for hours or anything. I just thought I'd try that last stage again. Ran out of lives. I couldn't make it through. What I do like is it's got a challenge. And the more I play that last stages, the better at them I get. But the problem with those last stages is they can take a while.
They can, yeah.
First time you play them, you're not used to some of the mechanics within the stage.
Oh, God, I kept dying because of time when I was playing the last stage.
Yeah, there isn't. It's very tight. I mean, it's been designed in such a way you can do it. But if your first time playing through those levels, then the likelihood is you're going to run out of time.
You do need to learn those levels. As I said, that annoying thing for me was getting used to not standing on the edges of those platforms so I didn't get crushed.
Mm.
Also kind of kept killing me when I was first playing it. But once I got used to that logic, it was fine.
Yeah. It does make me wonder what the future will be of Sonic Mania, whether or not there will be a sequel, as I said to you earlier.
I hope if they do a sequel, they just make it like Sonic something else, not Sonic Mania 2.
Some more fresh ideas in it, perhaps.
Yeah, they must have some.
Like, new characters would be cool.
Yeah.
You know, if they actually, or maybe brought some characters which aren't in. Because that's usually in Sonic Mania. Yeah. That's usually what they do with Sonic games, isn't it? Every new game, they introduce a new character.
Yes.
So, an original Sonic character in the next Sonic Mania-style game with maybe some mixing up of the gameplay mechanics.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, to be honest, I'm totally fine with them kind of making a different kind of Sonic game with Sonic, because I believe they get the point of what makes a good Sonic game a good Sonic game enough that they could do some interesting things with that. I don't know what that is.
Personally, I'd like to see an evolution of it. You know, I'd be happy with another one in this 16-bit style.
Yeah.
But I want to see the fantastic 2D sprite. What am I thinking of? I'm thinking of a game like Guilty Gear or BlazBlue with a really great illustrative style of 2D.
Yeah, the kind of 2D. Is 2D but 3D, are you talking? Or
it doesn't have to be 3D, but how that's always imagined Sonic to look eventually like a cartoon.
No, but I mean, like, couldn't that be really cool if they used like that Guilty Gear Xy engine?
They could do
engine
it like that.
So it looks flat, and then like, you know, you hit one of those crazy, like, oh my god, I'm going to whiz over the levels, and then it shifts to like a behind the back perspective.
Pretty
so
much what Sonic Forces does.
Yeah, but like done well.
I think the minute you switch into that 3D perspective, things start to go a bit squiffy.
Yeah.
But if it was just a cutscene, kind of like if you see him go round the ring in 3D, then come out again, you know, it could work. I think there's something there. We'll wait and see what happens, but it'll probably just be another 2D sequel.
It probably will. And to be honest, I wouldn't blame them.
I wouldn't mind it either. Yeah. As long as it's got enough new ideas in there.
Yeah. Other than that, I played and have been playing considerably, though today was kind of the day that I'm like, I think I'm done with that. Animal Crossing Pocket Camp.
Is it camp? Is it in your pocket?
It's small enough to fit in my pocket, and also the amount of fucks I give also fit in my pocket next to it.
Kind of
yes,
like
it
something
does.
That's very slightly camp.
Yes, exactly.
Pocket size camp.
No, it's okay. Like,
it's very dark in this room.
It is very dark in this room. I will turn on a light.
Sorry to interrupt the flow of the podcast.
Oh dear, Tom.
Now it's cozy.
It's okay. I could reach it. It's gone from darkness to hygge.
Sorry to interrupt. You're talking about Animal Crossing.
Yes, Pocket Camp.
Pocket Camp.
a lot of people who listen to this podcast who will have heard about video games or who have played it themselves will get where I'm coming from. It's the Animal Crossing experience with a lot of the charm stripped out, and there's a lot of incentive for you to spend real money in it that I'm kind of not okay with. But I knew there was a Christmas event coming at the end of this week, and so I thought, well, I will stick with it and see what the Christmas event is like. Well, it's to give people a chance to do all the tasks and collect all the items and all of the rest of it.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, I'll give this a go. I'll see what this Christmas event's about, because often when I played Animal Crossing, a lot of the charm for me was in the seasonal event.
Yeah, sure.
And that just seems like a more of an excuse to spend money, mm-hmm. which is a bit of a disappointment. So the game centers around you not being like the mayor of a town or an owner of a house in a village, but you are an owner of a campsite. Your goal is to get animals to come to your campsite. You do this by going to these animals and going, hey, here's some stuff, as you would in regular Animal Crossing. But then they also have a requirement that you need to be a certain friendship level with them, and your camp needs to contain like 5 items that they want, and then they will come and stay at your camp.
Okay.
So the gameplay loop is not really around the stuff that generally makes Animal Crossing fun, that you're doing things for rewards so you can make your town or your house or whatever better. Mm. All it is essentially you building stuff and using your materials, not to customize the camp the way you want it, but to customize the camp the way that
people
should come there. So it's kind of...
Right, it's a shame you can't put what you want in it.
Yeah, and I mean...
That's the idea, isn't it?
There is a way... I think they kind of felt some of this maybe when they were developing it, because there is a way where once you build these 5 pieces of furniture, which are all obviously on real-life timers, by the way, so they take like 8 or 12 hours to build, or you can speed them up with real money. Is that once you've built all these things, it says, hey, you can invite this person now, so you can invite them. And then it will say, do you want us to place this furniture for you automatically? And you can go, yeah, sure. So it places all this furniture. They come, they stay at your camp. And then it's like, do you want to remove it all? And I'm like, yeah.
What would be nice if they just came for a certain type of furniture? You can choose the design yourself. Say they want a sofa or a table.
Yeah.
You know, you can just have a sofa or a table and they'll come. But you can have it in the style you want it. That would be a nice way of doing it.
But this is the thing. I think the game is... I mean, Animal Crossing in general has so many options of sofas and so many offers of table, and the item types themselves, while there is a lot of variety in the how they look and how they feel, it's not a lot of actual difference in perhaps what they are enough for you to be able to do that properly. Like, you know, there's only so many objects in home, right? There's lamps, there's tables, there's chairs, there's desks. You don't really get TVs. Like, there are some specialist items. Like, I built a jungle gym for one guy, which has remained a permanent picture of my park as a result.
Well, that's nice. If you get certain character types, which you can tell what kind of thing they'd like.
Yes.
Maybe if you're a bodybuilder, you know, you get him some weights or something.
But
or
like,
a brainy guy, get him a chess set.
Yeah. The game tells you the things you need to build for them, though. So you when you level up, which you do by making the animals your friends, you gain access to a new character that you don't have. But then you also get told, like, oh, you can build these furnitures now. But, like, those furnitures are the ones that you need for that character 9 times out of 10. It's that character's furniture set. So there's not even really that much to do with leveling up other than just trying to start this loop of getting these characters again. And then every time you get a new character, you have to say goodbye to one of your other camp members because you can only have 9.
Right.
And so it's like, well, which ones of these do I actually like? Not a lot of them. I have all of the cats that I've possibly been able to get so far.
Can you see yourself keep playing this?
Not really. No, I don't think it's got the legs.
Losing its novelty factor.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good game to play for, you know, like 10 minutes just to dick around on and then go, okay, cool, I'm going to do a few of these tasks to get these cats I want. But like all of the animals now that are coming and visiting for the 3 hours or whatever before they rotate out, I don't want any of them. So I feel like I'm only inviting them just to level up so I can get the opportunity of getting characters
so
actually
it is
like.
Shallow compared to the console.
Oh, incredibly.
Versions.
And like none of the stuff like the museums are in there, so there's no like collection aspect
you can't
to make
catch
something
bugs.
Great. You can. So instead of like wandering around the big world, you go to like set areas and there's an area with the fruit trees, there's an area with a lake you can fish, there's an area with the sea you can fish. And there's also an area where you catch bugs. So you go back and forth these places and you do these things and different islanders appear in different things. There's also a mine you can go to which gives you items you can sell for more money, but that costs leaf tickets, which are the thing you buy with real life currency. The thing that's kind of super annoying about it, though, and kind of super frustrating, is to get Tom Nook and KK Slider, you have to buy a chair so they are permanently in your campsite, but that costs 250 leaf tickets, which is like, I don't know, about a tenner. The game does throw leaf tickets at you at the start of the game. I had about 400, and so I was cool, man, I'm buying KK Slider. So I got KK Slider, and then I'm like, well, I don't really want anyone else.
You don't
want good.
Tom Nook, really, do you?
I mean, I would if I had the option. Yeah. Like, if it was an item
He'll
I could get with Tom Nook.
Build you an extension without telling
exactly.
you.
Exactly. I mean, the house always wins, and therefore Tom Nook always wins. But, yeah, I don't know. It's pretty shallow, to be honest
with you.
Pretty
shallow free mobile game, which you can sink a load of money into if you want to.
Yeah, but I mean, there's no purpose to.
No.
Other than speeding up building these things for these characters you don't really
want. It's relying
want.
On people being impatient, really.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if it had more customization options, if there was really an onus around your camp and the way it looked, I would probably not feel too bad spending some money on it to get certain items I wanted. But at the moment, like...
You think this reflects badly on Nintendo, them releasing a game like
no,
this?
Apparently, no, apparently, Animal Crossing sales for the 3DS shot up like 290%.
Oh, because people were introduced
to
it through that,
this.
And
yeah.
They found out there's a much better game available. Yeah. So this is like a teaser.
Yeah, I guess so.
An introduction to the world.
They've said that they want their mobile games to be like teasers for upcoming releases. So I'm hoping this means there will be an Animal Crossing Switch.
So
we're going to
expect them all to be rather shallow.
The mobile games, I mean...
There's Mario Run and there's...
Mario Run isn't that shallow. It's a good game for what it is.
I played it for the first time in a shop demo on a phone the other day. Yeah. It doesn't run my phone. I was like, oh, this is
good
fun.
Game.
This is fun. I like it. This is simple, very Mario, works great, quality.
It's a good game. It's just people don't want to pay £8 for it.
No, I wouldn't buy it.
No, I did. I did because me, Matteo, and a good friend Matt were all playing it. Incidentally, the same guy I bought the Super Mario 3D Land off of and all that.
Mm.
And we were competing for high scores and stuff, and it was quite fun to play over Christmas while we were all separated.
Yeah.
But
it's just £8. I mean, I'd buy it if it was like £3 or something.
But yeah,
do you know what I mean?
A lot of people didn't want to pay for it, so alas, it didn't do very well.
I can't
so
buy it anyway, so
we won't see a Mario game, I think, on an iOS device because of that, because Nintendo won't make that much money. But Fire Emblem's good. I mean, Pokemon Go was great. Like, Miitomo had some charm to it.
Fire Emblem, what's the name of that one?
Fire Emblem Heroes.
Yes. A friend of ours, Eakin, he suggested I should do something Fire Emblem. For either we do something on Tom Matt Attack, do something on Blast Process, because he's a big fan. He wants to see some Fire Emblem stuff. So we have a request for some sort of Fire Emblem content.
Oh boy, let's see if we can deliver. If anyone's going to play it, it'll be me, but nah.
I'd love to give it a go, but it's just get capturing footage off a phone. I don't know how I'd do that.
You can get a HDMI out thing.
Oh,
it's easier to do than you'd think.
Yeah. Maybe I can do that and give like Tom plays on Fire Emblem Heroes.
Maybe. That'd be all right.
Yeah. Would you like to see that? Let us know.
On the Twitter at TMAcast. Other than that, there was something else I've been playing, but I can't think for the life of me what it is. So it's clearly... Oh, shit. I've been playing Toby Girl. It is something important.
You forgot about Animal Crossing last week.
I nearly forgot about a game I must have sunk about 10 hours into this week.
And what is it? This game? I've never heard of it, Matthew.
So Tobu Girl is an independent...
Tobu Girl.
Tobu Girl is a game developed by the folks at Tangram Games. And
who are Tangram Games?
It's two guys from Denmark. They live literally about a half hour's train ride away in a town called Odense, and... They've made a few games over the years, and they decided to make a physical release for the Nintendo Game Boy. And
you are on that, like a
I
car
was
bonnet.
On it. I was like, oh boy, a Game Boy game, a new one that looks
from
really
Denmark.
Nice, and in Denmark. Hello there. So I went to meet them on Wednesday. I got
said,
a copy
I'm
of the game.
Game Boyle.
No, they
YouTube
actually reached out to
celebrity.
Me. They said to me, like, hey, like, we like your YouTube channel. We've seen...
really? That must be quite flattering.
We've seen this. Would you like to have a look at this? Here's a preview build, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And
feature
so
it on your channel.
I said, yeah, cool. I'll go up. I'll interview you guys. That interview will be published somewhere soon. I'll probably put a link in the show notes when it is. And I'll also have a Boy Curious episode up by the time you hear this, I think.
Because it is a bit of a curiosity. It's not an official release.
It is not an official release, but...
But it is an example of somebody developing a game now.
Yes, and perhaps...
And popping it on an old Game Boy cartridge.
Yeah, and is perhaps one of the most ambitious games I've ever seen on the Game Boy.
That's exciting.
It is. It's good. You played a little bit
of it. A little bit. It's going to take a little bit to get used to, but yeah. I think once you do... This is addictive in the same way a lot of these fun mobile phone pick up and play games are.
Yeah, it's definitely got that like one more try feel to it of a Spelunky or whatever, and it's got some great...
Yeah, or something like Ninja Jump or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You've played that one?
Yeah.
You bounce between walls, you know. This is you're bouncing upwards. Are you explaining?
Yeah, you're a girl and your cat who you carry around on a balloon. You let go of the balloon by accident and your cat's being...
You have a cat you carry around on a balloon?
There was a cat on a balloon. Yeah. The girl has, and the girl is referred to in the instructions manual because it comes with a box and a manual if you buy the physical cart. The ROM is free, and the ROM is available online. Again, I'll post a link to that in the show notes. And she let go of the balloon by accident, and so you need to go jumping because Tobo means leaping in Japanese. And so you go leaping after your cat, and you go up through, you start on the plains, and then you go into the clouds, and then you go into space, is where I am at the moment.
And then where else after
I
space?
I don't know. There's a fourth stage to it, but to be honest with you, the third level is so hard that I haven't been able to beat it yet, and so I'm trying to do that so I can talk about it on a Boy Curious episode that should come
tough
up tomorrow.
Game, yeah.
Very tough game. Very challenging, very rewarding, and to be honest with you, I've lost so much time to it because you just don't realise how much time is passing because the reset rate is so quick.
Mm.
It's
like
based
Meat Boy
a lot
like
around
that, yeah.
dashes and jumps, and essentially by landing on an enemy's head, you will bounce, and so you have to get upwards. The timing right to bounce onto another creature. Some are static, some move, and there's spike traps and all the rest of it. But by pressing B, you get a boost, so you get like a jetpack, and
you
can't
get infinite boost.
You have not got infinite boost, and you can restore it by stomping on enemies, which is pressing down an A. However, A is also a dash button, so you actually have three dashes. So you can like jump up three times super quick if you need to.
If the next platform is quite difficult and not really near where you are, you can dash or use a combination of dashing or boosting to get to it.
I tend to play with a lot more boosting and stomping than I do dashing, just because the dash is incredibly...
It sounds like a kind of backwards downwell.
Yeah, it is a little bit like a backwards downwell, to be honest with you. It's got that level of depth to it. There's not like weapons or anything, so you don't have to worry about shooting, but it is, you are trying to ascend to a portal at the top of the screen. It's got some great things, like you're always racing against time as well, which puts an extra dimension to the game, because you're properly stressing out about this timer ticking down, and you can hear it ticking, and you're like, oh God, I gotta get up here, I gotta do these things.
Yeah.
And the levels are randomly generated, so it's not like Mega Man.
You can't memorize it,
the pattern and just get to the top. Every time it will be different. There are algorithms in place, I've heard, to make sure that it is always fair and is always completable. So that's something as well. You know you're not going to get to the top and go, oh shit, there's four spike traps, I can't do anything about
that. Yeah, that's good. That's what any game like that should have, yeah.
But it's got a lot of modern sensibilities on a retro gaming console. And to be honest with you, it's probably one of the most fun things I've played in a long time.
Oh,
so
wow. That's high praise.
I'm very looking forward to beating it. But yeah, you also can play it too. It'll be available on their internets for free
can
as a ROM.
Play it online.
Yeah, you can. There's just a ROM file you can download from itch.io and
need an emulator.
Yeah, you just use an emulator. Yeah. I recommend OpenMU if you have a Mac, and then if you don't, there's a million good Game Boy emulators out there. But yeah, it's been good. I was playing it before I went to see them on the PS4, and as I told them, I was expecting to play it for like half hour and then go, okay, this is a nice feeling game, but I was genuinely lost an afternoon to it where I needed to do stuff and spent my whole evening playing it yesterday, so it's got a lot of grip, a lot of staying power. It's good.
Great.
Yeah. And you're falling asleep. You're coming down from the Red Bull. So
I don't know.
Wrap up this podcast.
Really, I don't think the Red Bull actually had a very brief effect on me.
Me too.
Very brief.
Yes.
And now I'm totally coming down. I feel like I just go to sleep now.
That's okay.
Which is not what you expect after drinking a Red Bull, is it?
Oh, it's all right. We can wrap up the podcast. We'll leave the lights on so you don't nod off the corner because the cat will eat you. If you've enjoyed this podcast, you can let us know in a variety of places on facebook.com/TomAttack, at TMAcast on Twitter, and in blastprocess.com's comment section, as well as at TomAttack.com/podcast. If you're listening to this program while in iTunes, why not give us a cheeky rate and subscribe? Or if you're listening to us on YouTube, in fact, even give us a comment there.
Yes. Just a disclaimer that I don't have a computer anymore.
No.
So I'm not able to post this podcast on blastprocess.com or on our YouTube channel.
No.
So the only way to listen to the next two episodes that we would do before Christmas is to go to tomattattack.com or
on iTunes or Stitcher, iTunes wherever good podcasts are sold.
But not blastprocess.com and not YouTube for the time being. Until
maybe we can have a word with Mike or someone and see if they can put it up in the time being. Like
possibly.
Yeah, but
it's
just
when you have a routine of how you do it.
Yeah,
you've got to ensure that that's carried through.
Yes, you do.
So maybe you, maybe not.
It's just a little bit
life without a computer.
I know.
That's
it's gonna be so good for you.
It's fine.
Yeah.
To be honest,
be
but
right.
It means I can't do some things at Paris Pickup. So that's also on hold for the time being.
But yeah, there will be. Will there be two podcasts after this, or just one?
We agreed. I think there's just one because you're not available.
So. No, I'm not. I will be jetting off somewhere.
Yeah.
For a little bit.
So, yeah, one more this year.
Yeah.
It would seem.
Okay. Yeah.
Unless we do some more once I'm back in the UK, because that's the big news, and I think we've been talking about it.
We have talked about it on the podcast.
I'm going to be living here in Denmark as of the 18th of December.
Yeah, you're currently unemployed. You don't even have a job at the moment.
Yeah. So that's a thing.
Yeah.
But we'll reassure you that it doesn't mean an end to the podcast, because I wouldn't want that, and I don't think Matt wants that either. So we're going to continue that over the internet. More details to follow, I guess, when we'll actually have our first new episode from season two, I suppose.
Well it will be a new season of the podcast,
which will probably begin in the new year, I guess.
I guess so.
That makes sense, I mean
we could maybe try and do something before then. We haven't really talked about whether we're going to do Game of the Year next week or if we're going to just do a regular podcast and see where it lands.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, we need to figure out how to record these things. I have some ideas, and obviously Dave has done similar things with Blast Process podcast before, so we can figure this out between us. But, yeah.
Just want to keep you guys in the loop, let you know what's going on but I mean, like behind the scenes.
If next week is the last week, then maybe I'll try and record something. And, I mean, there's ways of doing it. There's, like, recording it over the phone and stuff. The audio won't be great, but we'll figure it out.
We'll do it.
But yeah, one more across the table, Tom. That's all there is. 182 will be...
I'm sure we'll do it again one day.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure I'll come visiting crew. God.
And I'll come back here.
We can do it on my wedding weekend. Yeah, that'd be funny.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll figure it out.
Okay.
Okay, cool. Well, until next week, everybody.
Thanks for checking out the podcast. We always appreciate it.
And it's time to say those words we do every week. What are they, Thomas?
Game on.
They are.